14 viral vaccines, 4 blood vaccines, and also 6 diagnostic reagents. In total, we've got a production capacity in the plant of approximately 170 million doses per annum. Honesty Board is involved in some key vaccines which generate most of our revenue, and those would be the blue tongue vaccine, the African horse sickness. When I say these are actually unique to OBP, Newcastle disease, Rift Valley fever, inactivated, a number of autogenous vaccines. We are also flexible for custom-made vaccines and antigen and appropriate combinations as the customer may wish to order from us. This slide seeks to indicate to the members the amount of sales we have made in the past financial year, and it compares it with the sales we've made in the previous years. Particularly 2007-2008 was not a good year, but we did pick up in 2008-2009, and the statistics currently indicate that we are in good track to do very well in the next year as well. We don't only manufacture vaccines, but we are also involved in other activities as a state-owned entity, which have to do actually with the alignment with the agenda of government. One of that agenda, for instance, is the rural development. We have been involved in the past year in a lot of activities collaborating to uplift emerging farmers and farmer associations like the Red Meat Association and the Wool Growers Association. We have collaborated substantially in partnership with the provincial departments to train farmers through farmers' days and so on and so forth. We also participate by ensuring that small farmers can get smaller packs, because a small farmer does not need huge packs because of the limited number of livestock he has on his farm. So we try to respond in that way to uplift emerging farmers. OBP is a company that not just South Africa is dependent upon, but also the rest of the world is, especially Africa. For instance, I can indicate to you that we've been supporting Zimbabwe in training its farmers and in providing vaccines to them. We have got a substantial business that we are doing with them currently as part of our effort to deal with the issue of ensuring food security. Very recently, I can share with the members that there was an outbreak of Rift Valley fever in the Northern Cape, and the Northern Cape depended on us to respond expeditiously to ensure that the disease does not spread beyond the borders of Northern Cape. And it's very important to realize that diseases such as Rift Valley fever are classified as zoonotic diseases, meaning that they can transfer to human beings as well. So it's very important in terms of public health that we have to respond expeditiously. I talked earlier about our involvement with supporting neighboring countries. For example, these are the farmers you see and veterinarians of Zimbabwe. We deployed our fellow here who is involved with the training, Mr. Billy Border. You can see him there. Very recently, we were there to support the Zimbabweans, because we act beyond the borders of South Africa as well. I do want to share with the members also the export sales that go beyond the volumes that go beyond South Africa. You will see there that we've got the sales that went to Djibouti. That's Djibouti, and Nature Food is a company that is in Somalia, and we've got Zimbabwe, quite a substantial volume that we send, and we've got even Germany there. That's the company that is in Germany that they order from us, Portuguese, and so on and so forth. So OBP does supply substantially the external market, external South Africa. Now, I just want to take you through quickly the activities that we do in terms of our human resources, because part of our activity is to support and develop our personnel We have got OBP, a skills development program in which we try to develop our personnel. We provide them with bursaries. We have mostly reached equity targets. We try to support our employees in what we call a wellness program to deal with the diseases that afflict them, such as the HIV AIDS program. Here is the staff profile of OBP. Currently, we have got 20% management. Then you've got 13% professionals, you've got technicians and clerks, and this is the general distribution of the personnel according to the category of their training and their profession. We also have got that breakdown in terms of the gender. We have got 43% females and 57% males. We also have got a race profile which shows that we have got 73% African, 23% white, 3% colored people, and 1% Indian. Staff with disabilities, 97% are staff without disabilities, and 3% are staff with disabilities. We do the training, as I mentioned earlier. This is the cost comparison in each and every category as we provide training for our staff. Most of the past year's training was focused on management. This is primarily because we wanted to strengthen management. The company has got to have a strong leadership, so the expenditure reflects that. But now, in the next coming of years, we will spend a lot of our training budget, on those categories down there. Just to peep through the future, just to indicate to the members what are our plans for the future. We have got some strategic objectives that we want to achieve in the future. We want to increase the operational profit, obviously, as a business, because we don't get appropriations from Parliament. All what we do it through the revenue that we generate as a business. And therefore, the profit is a very important line in terms of our business. We increase an operational profit, we increase the sales volume and value. We want to build partnerships with provincial governments. In that respect, I have had bilateral discussions with various leaders in the departments of agriculture to see how we can support them. We want to establish a strategic vaccine bank in partnership with the government to ensure that we can respond more efficiently when there is an outbreak of disease. There has to be a lot of vaccine that we put in stock. We also want to gain access to government to build a plant. As I indicated in my first slide, OBP's plant was established in 1968. The state of the plant is very bad. We keep on feeling that we should get support from government, especially in terms of capital expenditure to ensure that there can be development in that area. But we have to date not yet succeeded in that endeavor. We also want to improve, of course, to develop new products, and we want to increase our scientific expertise as a business. And we are getting certain challenges, which I would like to share with the members. I've indicated to you that the state of our plant is a serious concern for us. It means that many of our products, because we have to comply to what are called good manufacturing practices, GMP, we cannot access certain markets because the state of the plant does not comply to GMP standards. We also want to ensure that we can respond more expeditiously when there has always got to be product available. We want to be involved in more research to provide new products, and we want to establish a better capacity for research, in other words, scientists on the ground. There has been an erosion of that during the number of years, and OPP has been impacted negatively. As part of those challenges, we present these as solutions that we need a vaccine bank and we need a plant upgrade. And if we can achieve these two, we will be more competitive as a business. I think I'm going to end here, members, and then allow my chief financial officer to now take you through the actual figures that were achieved in the past year. Thank you very much.
All right, Mr. CEO, let's hear from you.
Chair President, good morning to honorable members and my team, as well as the representatives of the department. My name is Bernard. I actually am left with probably 5 or 4 minutes, and so it's going to be basically, the decision was that let's rather put everything in perspective and therefore show the other years as much as the focus is on the 2 years, 2008-09 as well as 2007-08. We thought that it's important that we see what is the trend like, and especially in light of the comments that you made when we were here last year, that the company, we have a turnaround strategy, and these numbers are actually indicating that we are in the right direction. And just on a few important lines, the first one, if you look at 2008-09, and you compare that to 7-08, last year we made sales of 70.3 million, and this year we made sales of just about 84 million rand, which is a significant improvement from last year's numbers. And one of the slides, the sales unit slides that Doc spoke to when he was doing his presentation, actually indicates or edifies what I've just said, that we are actually in the right direction, because that sales slide indicates that we've actually reclaimed the market that we had lost in the past, and therefore these numbers are actually an indication of that, from 70 million to actually 84 million rand this year. Then we had a gross profit of 23 million rand last year, and then we had 32 million rand this year. And then we had an operating loss last year of just 6.7 million. And then this year we were sitting at 4.1 million rand. And that's actually a significant improvement, because we're moving from 6.7 to 4.1. But if you take out of the 4.1 million, 2.7 million, which was a non-operating, or what would have been called in the past in accounting an extraordinary item, when the company lost about 2.7 million through cyber theft. So if you take the 2.7 million out of 4.1 million, what it actually shows is that the company made an operating loss of just over 1.7 million. So from 6.7 million operating loss to about 1.7 million rand operating loss, that's a significant improvement. And we thought also, just to add onto that we're actually really in the right direction. We thought it prudent to actually include the performance of the first 6 months of this year. And if you look at these numbers, we were actually sitting at, if you look at this, we were sitting at 40 million at the end of September. And I can report that we, at the end of October, we're actually above 50 million. Which really puts us in the and if you look at the previous period, we were actually at 32 million. So 40 million versus 32 million is a 26.3% improvement. And I think for me the most significant line is actually the operating profit or loss before finance cost. Last year we were sitting at an operating loss at the end of September last year, at an operating loss of 2.68 million. And at the end of September this financial year, we were sitting at an operating profit of 5.6 million, which is more than significant improvement. And that basically testifies to the fact that really the company is in the right direction. And your profit for the period, for the first 6 months, we were at 11.8 million versus a net profit last year of 3 million. Thank you. The next slide basically indicates what I was mentioning as I was doing the presentation. It's on the graph. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. So we've come to the end of your presentation. So the bottom line is it can be done within a limited time. I just want to mention to the committee that we have apologies from Mrs. Mabuza, Mr. Boschman, Ms. Carter, our whip, Ms. Twala, and of course the chairperson, Mr. Johnson. Then I understand that we have representatives here of every vet. There's also a veterinary products company. I may just say welcome. This meeting is all such portfolio committee meetings are open to the public. So we regard you as members of the public present here. Anybody that has an interest, you have the press here, you have, do I see the press here? I don't think the press is very interested in veterinary matters. Okay, it's now exactly about 25, 26 minutes past 11. Can we take the first round of questions, Mr. Pretorius?
Thank you, Chair. And also from the DA side, apology for my colleague, Mr. Bosman, who can't be here today, as the Chairman said. Just two quick questions, Chair, and while it's still fresh, refer to the financial side. I must say we're impressed, I think, all by the turnaround and the turnover for the first 6 months of this year, or the first 7 months, in fact, which is 50 million. Am I correct in saying that the second half of the year is your better half? In other words, you can probably end up, everything stays the same in the region of 90 million for the year. Is that a reasonable expectation? That's my first question. I'm saying that because looking at last year's figure, for the first 6 months you were 32 million and ended up at, what is it, 80 odd million. So it appears that your second half is your better half. You're on line to do well this year. My second question, sir, relates to the dire need for upgrading of the facilities. We've heard it previously and we heard it also today. And I want to make refer to a remark in the annual report which says initiatives to upgrade the company's facilities are at an advanced stage. I need to know what does that mean in light of the fact that the government hasn't provided any money for that purpose yet. Will it be funded internally or through loan funding, or how will that be done if the government doesn't come to light with money to do that? I will stop at that.
Rest your case there. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Pretorius. Baba Shebekuru.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the presentation, a mention was made of the company going as far as outside the borders of the country to help in areas where there are animal diseases. I wanted just to first find out, since there is no proper control of animal counting in or livestock counting in rural areas, how did the organization came about with the percentages that has been sort of tabulated here? Simply because there is no control of counting of animals in rural areas. Two, in some areas, you could find that in rural areas, where I'm specifically on, there are a lot of sicknesses or animal diseases, like lamb skin disease, that is covering most of the part, mostly in Guazmatal, where I've seen. Does the organization only go to areas when invited to by the Department of Agriculture, or maybe it only goes where it has been declared, where in areas where it has been declared that there are diseases? Another question is that of the interest on awarding of bursaries. Understand bursaries are only awarded to maybe staff members who want to further their studies. Has the company ever thought of maybe awarding bursaries to school leavers in order to sort of increase the number of researchers from university level or schooling level? I think I'm covered, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Next round. Okay. Have you got something, Mr. Petulia? No, I wanted to look after the members first.
Well, then I'll use the opportunity, Chair, if I may.
Yes, please do.
Can I just refer to the report of the independent auditors to the shareholder? Although it appears to be a clean report, there are certain matters which the government auditor general would probably call matters of emphasis, which he pointed out. For example, the SAP has not reported on all the predetermined objectives as required by the PMA. The accounting officer did not ensure that the entity has and maintained an effective and efficient transparent systems and internal controls regarding performance management. And there's also no quarterly report on the progress in achieving measurable objectives and targets were prepared. My question basically is what is being done to stop or to ensure that this doesn't happen again? I would take it that the entity would take this very seriously and do something about it. I just need clarity on what steps are being taken to stop that from happening again. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any further questions? No?
Okay.
Do you want to go for it, Mr. Gaylor? Or do you want to respond first and take another round?
I think that would be good. I think
yeah. But now, may I just remind you that I have seen that there's always a tendency that when the first round of questions are put, then the responses are long-winded. And I know that the officials actually try to play out the time. So please, the questions have been very crisp and clear, so give us crisp and clear and to-the-point answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Anavichai. Let me respond to the questions, and where appropriate, I will ask some members of the team to respond.
Later.
Yes. The first question, which looks at the projection of whether we could reach, in terms of sales, 90 million, it is our hope. Yes, in the past, the second half of the year has done significantly well. We are hoping that that will be the case. However, we have to recognize that the current economic climate of recession is such that we are experiencing a lot of resistance from farmers to vaccinate. They want to save money. Given those dynamics, it is also possible that we may not reach 90 million, okay, given the economic climate. That's the first response. The second response relates to the upgrade of the plant, which looks as to whether, in fact, we are looking at government. We are actually looking at a combination of scenarios in the upgrade of the plant where we could actually source revenue to upgrade the plant. Yes, the government, since we are a state-owned entity, is an option, but that's not the exclusive option. We could go to the market and look and raise revenue to do so, but we have not done so. However, there are some preliminary studies that have been made to check. For example, engineers have gone and come in and done some studies and drawn up some plans, some drawings, and those are the activities that we are talking about that we are saying are at an advanced stage. The plans are on paper, but it is the biggest hurdle for now is to raise revenue for the work. The next question relates to the counting of animals. The actual generation of statistics is not done by on-the-spot biological products. As a matter of fact, this information, we researched and found it at the website, I think, of the Department of Agriculture, of the National Department of Agriculture, to tell us what is the demographics of animals in the country. So that kind of research doesn't come for us. So I cannot be able to specifically tell you the methodology used to count animals in the rural area. The other question related to lumpy skin disease, and I think the question was, how do we respond when there is an outbreak of a disease? Do we go there, and how do we go there? First of all, what happens is that many of these diseases are notifiable. The department, the provincial department of agriculture, in any particular part of the country, will be the first people to know that there is an outbreak of a particular disease in any particular area. For example, we were alerted recently, as I indicated in my statement, in the Northern Cape, that there was an outbreak of Red Valley fever. Because our response, our mandate is to make vaccines available to prevent, then that's where we come in. We then get told to deploy vaccines in all the areas that might be affected to prevent the spread of the disease. But essentially, our mandate has to ensure that the product is available. And going beyond that would be then to do activities such as training and whatever else we can do in terms of our veterinary activities. The next question related to batteries to staff, yes. The focus of Onderstepoort, we understand, has to also to do with the development of our own personnel. And not just all our personnel, also to have an impact. Because our staff come from communities. Many of them, as you see the demographics, come in very disadvantaged communities. They have got ambitions to develop their skills and whatever and whatever. So we do that in order to support those activities. One, of course, of our objectives is to also improve the scientific depth of our scientists. So if we've got scientists working in the laboratories, in the plant, who want to, on a part-time basis, develop their skills and do a degree in PhD and register with a university, those are the activities we support. In fact, some of our staff have acquired very senior degrees through our efforts of supporting them. And so, but our scheme is limited to our employees. We have not gone beyond to the community too because of the budget constraints. I will just allow then my chair or the chief financial officer to deal with the issue of the raise through the audit comments.
Fire up, Mr. CEO.
Thank you, Chair. The question was basically on the performance information as to whether there's anything that we're doing on the basis of the report from the auditor. Perhaps if I were to qualify before I go to the to qualify the report from the auditor, there are certain things on the performance information. The performance information is there, but the monitoring of whether the company is actually its performance is according to that. Between ourselves and the auditors, they actually reported that we there are certain things like holding meetings and then recording in those meetings that these are the things that we are actually doing in terms of monitoring performance. And this is for the first time that this session is actually being audited. And we have agreed with the auditors that we will work towards actually resolving all the differences that we've had between ourselves and them. And also in terms of how going forward as an institution, how do we monitor the performance of the company in line with its objectives.
Any further responses? Are you satisfied? Have you covered everything? Have you covered all the questions?
Yes, we have.
Thank you. Another round. Can you just switch off your mic there? Another round. Honorable Gayla.
Yeah. My colleague has most of the questions that I wanted to ask, but I want to follow up. And you say you're doing rural development. One would like to know which areas have you covered, and are the people there aware that you are there on the support? Secondly, you talk of small packages for small farmers, which is in the villages. Are the small farmers aware of that? If they are not aware, how do you plan to make them aware that they are those type of packages? Is there any system that you have to make them aware? Then on your training, I'm not happy with your answer on training. Yes, you've got financial constraints, I agree with you. But we've got lack of skills in this country. there's a major lack, especially in agriculture. And I would be happy to say that you work with FET colleges or agricultural colleges to assist those students that are there. You need to do something to assist the lack of skills. Definitely, tomorrow you are going to need skills. There's a shortage of skills within you as well. So really, I'm not happy with that. The thing of that, you don't have a budget for you. It's just not acceptable. Not with the lack of skills we have in this country. Totally not acceptable. So I cannot accept that one. We just cannot, every day when we meet agriculture, all these communities, there's a lack of skills. So really we have to do every entity has got to do something to uplift the skills in our country. Then, yes, I hear that you react when you get a report from provincial departments, but one feels that's not enough, Chairperson. If you remember very well, when we had the swine flu, we lost millions. But if we had prevented that, if we had proper research done, in Chuba, they prevent these things happening. So one would think that you have to come up with a research that prevents so that we don't make losses. So that's what I'm not really. If you can just at least satisfy us on those issues. Thank you.
Okay, I would like to add on a couple of questions since the honorable members have all completed. Baba, have you still got something?
Thank you, Chair, but it was still related to the research. In fact, one of the things that I missed to raise is the question of the decrease in animal production in cows in the rural areas, or so to say, those emerging farmers or subsistence farmers, if I may say so. I wonder if there's that decrease in milk production, one, two, and the milk is weak. I wonder if the government has ever come across that. If so, then what have they done in order to help those people out there? Those seemingly understand milk is one of the food chains that has
nutritional value.
Yes, definitely. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Pretorius, have you got
anything else?
Just one quick question about the capital expenditure. I just asked the question, what is the amount that you're looking at to upgrade your facilities? Is there a plan A, plan B, plan C scenario, or what sort of figures are you looking at?
Thank you.
All right. Now, this is the last round of questions. We've got about 17, 18 minutes to go to 11 o'clock. On one of the slides where you talk of the animal health market, I see a colossal figure, 1343009,946. I think when you make a presentation of a document, please go through it, because these documents become documents that are put on file. So that is a totally misleading figure. I know that you've got 10 too much there. But I just want to, we must improve the quality of the documents that we present. Right. The other question is, you have spoken here about your alignment with rural development. And you say there that there's a collaboration with emerging farmers and associations, NERPO, NAFU, National Wool Growers, and then you have provincial partnerships, you have farmers training, farmers days, you identify and use new black distributors, and then of course you've got PPPs and what have you, and support programs for emerging farmers. Now, could you perhaps give us details, and if you don't have it now, if you could provide it to the committee, of the number of such farmers' days that were held, the number of farmers that were trained, if you are doing farmer training, and the use of new black distributors, where are they located, and what is the general amount of stock in terms of medication, vaccines, or whatever that you have actually been able to distribute through these distributors. I take it that you use them, as you say here, as distributors. We would like to know that. We would like to see and measure what sort of progress are we making. Then, with regard to the department itself, the Department of Rural Development and the Department of Agriculture, what sort of alignment do you have with them? Because you say that you work with rural development. Rural development can be rural development per se. It can also be working with the Department of Rural Development. So we'd just like to know what sort of alignment do you have. The other issue is the issue raised by Baba Shebekulu as well as the other members regarding prevention rather than cure. In what way are you communicating with a broad public, when I say the broad public, those that are engaged in livestock farming, to help them to prevent certain things? Like, for example, I mean, if you're a sheep farmer, then naturally you need to see that you use that blue tongue medication, so that you prevent blue tongue, not after blue tongue has already infested your herd, your flock. What are you doing to bring that home to people? You say that you've been holding workshops. I take it that had to do with these farmers' days and the farmer training, so you'll respond to that, the number that you've held. And as I say, if you don't have the information, please send it to us in writing, that we have it on record. For example, now the issue of farmers who in terms of the current economic climate are trying to save a bit of money and trying to cut little corners. Now if you take, for example, some or other worm infestation in sheep or the prevention thereof, let's take a product called Prodose Orange. I think you pay slightly more than 1,000 rand for 5 liters or for 10 liters. And I think your dosage is about 2 mil. Now, if you break that down into rand terms, you are talking of a minimal amount of money per head, which will be covered by the death of one sheep. I mean, if you lose one sheep, today, you know, for a good breeding ewe, I don't think you can buy something for 1,000 rand. So, are we bringing this home to the people that it's being penny wise and pound foolish that we sort of skimp on dosing them and vaccinating for various diseases that are prevalent in particular parts of the country? Yeah, you say that your broad principle is to prevent and control animal diseases that impact food security. What are you doing in the field to help prevent that and to help control animal diseases? What are you doing in the field? What are you doing, for example, to people in our rural areas, especially the old communal areas, where there are no fences? I mean, it's a free-for-all. You know, your animals, my animals, our animals, they all graze together. They can transfer, for example, sexually transmitted diseases as well, like trikes and things like that. What are you doing to get to those people to educate them as to what they should be doing And then the question that Mr. Gehler asked, what are we doing? May I just remind ourselves that, okay, you are the division that manufactures vaccines, but you also have the OVI. What are we doing together with ARC? What are we doing as state entities? I remember we are state entities. What are we doing to help people breed livestock where the quality is improved? I think I've said it before, I think agriculture knows it quite well, that whilst 50% of the cattle population in our country is owned by people who are small stock owners, and the other 50% is owned by, well, you know, maybe 1 or 2% this way or that way, by commercial people, which includes people who were previously disadvantaged, some of them. Very good farmers, too. Once that's the scenario, that's not reflected in the quality and the kilograms that are produced by the two sectors. What has OVI, ARC, as I take it you work with both of them, done, as well as yourselves, to work on that kind of situation? And are you perhaps liaising with OVI and ARC to look at our FET colleges that Mr. Gehler spoke of to help create... well, look, you don't really need to have a veterinarian all the time to do things. On the farms, it's the ordinary person that does the inoculations and vaccinations and dosing and stuff. What are we doing to train more of those people? Thank you very much.
Can we
respond within 10 minutes to the last batch of questions?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me try my best to respond to all the questions to the best of my ability. The first question related to how do we participate in rural development. We do want to recognize that part of the one of the priorities of the current government is actually rural development. And when we sat and did our strategy visioning and thinking, we said given our mandate, which is the prevention of animal diseases in South Africa, that's the mandate, by making available vaccines to the livestock industry in South Africa, to enhance and to support the rural development agenda, what do we do? So we sat down and we thought about the matter. And we said we can make, first of all, small packs of vaccines available to the small farmer. That's one way. We can work through the organizations like NEPO, like and whatever, to provide training, because we have got the veterinarians, the trained people, and so on and so on, on the ground. However, in order to access the rural people, the very deep rural people, we need to work in partnership with the departments in the various provinces. As a matter of fact, we do go out where for example, there are association meetings. We go out as owners of board to make presentations, to talk to the farmers, to talk about the importance of vaccination, sometimes to even demonstrate how to vaccinate, because some of the people are not trained. You will be happy to know, Chair, that even very recently, I was down in rural Nelene in the Eastern Cape to address a wool growers association who had serious problem with scabies in sheep, and we support them. So all those activities, which we do either through organized formations in agriculture or through the department, We are always there on the ground. In respect of how many have you done, have we done, we don't have the statistics. I accept we will provide you in a written document so that you know exactly what are the numbers of meetings we've attended and so on and so forth. I commend you doing that in the next few days. There was a question relating to what actually do we do with the lack of skill in South Africa? Why are we not working with FET colleges and so on and so on? I think that's a valid question. And the lack of skill in South Africa is chronic. And in fact, agriculture itself is seriously impacted by this. We do our bit, the best we can do, noting, of course, that the mandate for training in South Africa really falls elsewhere, falls in the Department of Agriculture. You know that, sorry, in the Department of Education. You know, for example, that we have had a substantial decline in the production of veterinarians in South Africa, mainly because the faculty that used to produce veterinarians was closed down, and the only faculty in South Africa that is producing veterinarians is not producing sufficient numbers, especially for production animals, because many of the veterinarians that are currently being produced are actually for cat animals. We are interacting with our colleagues, for example, in the training of veterinarians and other animal technicians and so on and so forth, to deal with these issues. We can actually do our bit by providing support there and there where we can, where resources are available. Then there was a question of the decrease in the milk production in rural areas.
And the quality.
And the quality. I have to concede, Chair, that I do not have the sufficient depth in knowing the reason why there is this decline in the production of milk. I do not know whether it is related to anything that we can do or OVI can do, because we've got researchers in OVI, the Honest Depot Veterinary Institute, which has actually the mandate to do research and diagnostics. In other words, when there is a problem in a farm, and the swabs are taken, and the bleeding and the blood is taken to Honest Depot, and that does not come to us. It goes to the OVI. And I think those scientists at OVI ought to be the ones who provide the capacity, the scientific knowledge, to be able to respond more appropriately to the questions that you are raising. On our side, I have to concede that I do not have the depth to be able to answer now as to why there is the decline in the quantity and quality of milk that is being produced.
Doctor, can I just bother you with this?
Yes.
And request you whether you would kindly discuss it with OVI.
Yes.
And I'll request Baba Shebekulu to make available his cell phone number.
Right.
So that in case they need to contact somebody that has the problem, then they can do so. Thank you.
I will do so. I want to say to you that I also have a very good relationship with the president of the AFC. I can call him and he will respond positively. Thank you very much. Now, there was a question relating to what other plans. Do we have plan one, plan two in relation to the upgrade of the plant? Our first plan that we looked at was the, because of the state of the plant, was to actually build a new plant, completely new plant. And we had costing done for that, and so on and so forth. But the cost associated with building a completely new plant adjacent to the existing plant is actually significant and probably limiting. Because given our financial resources, I don't think it would be viable unless there's a significant financial injection from elsewhere, such as from government. The other alternative that we are looking at, we've begun to investigate more seriously, is the phased-in upgrade of the existing plant. In other words, we upgrade the production area, we then go, after we finish that, we upgrade the other area, and so on and so forth. But that has got its own complications in the sense that we have to work in a sterile environment because the products that we produce have got to be sterile. They should not be contaminated. We are studying as to what that impact would have if we do a phased-in production. Because if we were to build a new plant, we would completely seal the existing plant and work in it and simply move to the new facility. But in the light of the resources that are scarce, we are currently investigating Plan B, which would be, and also Plan B might actually be cost-effective, more cost-effective than Plan A. So I don't have, we have not settled on any one of those plans.
The cost
for Plan B, we have not really scientifically costed it, but we know that it's going to be significantly cheaper than the preliminary studies that we have done indicate that it will be cheaper. We are not looking at anything close to half a billion if we do the phased-in approach. Okay. Thank you very much.
Doctor, you've got 4 minutes left.
Yes. There was a question about what do we do in terms, exactly what do we do to align ourselves with the Department of Agriculture in terms of the activities we do. We are in constant collaboration and discussion both with the National Department of Agriculture and also with the Provincial Department. A typical case in point, for example, has been the Department of Agriculture has been initiating a primary health care program. Which primary health care program will be supported by the availability of particular vaccines, which are important, for especially in the control of transboundary diseases, transboundary animal diseases. So that list has been provided by our veterinarians through their knowledge of the public health system. And so we work collaboratively and very closely with those departments. I myself, in my position as chief executive, have taken time to visit and have bilateral discussions with the heads of departments of agriculture in each and every province. In fact, there is only one province outstanding now that I must still visit, the Western Cape. And once that is completed, we have a broader picture of how we can, in fact, be able to support the whole rural development and so on and so forth. That's our engagement with the department. The next question has to do with how do we communicate the prevention of diseases. I do want to indicate to honourable members that, as I keep going back to the mandate of Wonder Step One, that it is the prevention of animal diseases. And the way we prevent animal diseases is to ensure that animals are vaccinated. And that message has to go through to the farmer, that they cannot save, as the Honorable Chair said, the penny, don't know how you put
penny
it.
Penny wise and pound foolish.
That's correct. That it is important for them to vaccinate, to prevent the disease. However, the farming business, at the end of the day, the decision has got to be made by the owner of the farm, the farmer, who makes the final decision as to whether, how am I going to go through the research, am I going to save by not vaccinating and whatever. But our message from ourselves and through the reps that are on the ground is that farmers ought to vaccinate. And of course, if they don't vaccinate, they are also hurting our bottom line as well. So we have an interest that they must vaccinate.
1 minute to go.
I think. The last question, Chair, was what are we doing with the ARC? Are we collaborating at all with the ARC, with the OVI and whatever? Yes, the answer is actually a definite yes. In fact, very recently, we did sign a memorandum of agreement with the ARC, which gives us a framework on how we collaborate on issues, especially with the OVI. And in fact, very soon, next week, as early as next week, we are having a workshop that we are having with all the institutions at on the state board, including the FBI, including the university, including ourselves, to actually look at what are the activities we could do collaboratively to ensure that we respond better to the animal health industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. Has OBI got a little parting shot that they wish to make?
Please, Mr. CFO.
Thank you, Chair. I think for me it's on the question of what are we doing on the skills in the country. It's a very important question. On my presentation at the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University about 2 weeks ago, one of the things that I mentioned to the students was that there is one of the reasons why we have crime in this country is because we never gave the students, the young people, a chance. We never gave them an alternative. And therefore, as one of the state-owned entities, we have that responsibility. Otherwise, 10 years down the line, when we have crime as much as we have now, then we will know that we are partly responsible for that. And it's a responsibility because it talks to corporate social investment. And it's one thing that is an institution that we've actually ignored. And we recognize that we are going to do something about that.
Well, thank you very much, Advocate, Doctor, Mr. CFO, and the two good ladies. May I just leave a parting shot with you? And that is that, of course, if one wants to remain in this particular environment and remain a role player, then you have to see that you align yourselves with the demands of the time and that you are able to compete. Now, if there is no other way of upgrading your facilities, from time to time we see state-owned enterprises seeking permission to be able to raise loans and things like that. So one should perhaps have a serious look at that and make a presentation to your principals and see whether that sort of thing would be feasible or not. I'm merely throwing this in. Rather, thank you once again for your presence. Sorry that I subjected you to strict timelines, but we want to utilize our time as judiciously as possible, try and get the maximum out of it. Thank you very much. You may remain seated or you may leave if you have commitments like catching flights and that sort of thing.
Chair, on behalf of OBP, thank you very much for having us here. We'd like to reiterate our invitation to the Portfolio Committee to please come and visit us and to see our plant and to learn more about us in a practical way. Thank you.
But I've been there, but I think it would be a good thing if the committee could visit the place and they'll get a sense of what goes on. Thank you very much.
We now have
Nkeha Farms. Shall I call upon Mr. Andile Hoss? He has intimated that he is the relevant person.
Ready, Mr. Hoss? Now, your team are all known to the members of the committee.
But can I ask the members of the committee, do you want an introduction of Mr. Horse's team?
No.
Yeah. We know them. They are faces that are familiar to us.
But for me, Chairperson, for the first time to see them, I wanted to introduce.
Oh, all right.
Sure. Mr. Horse, will you please introduce your team? Baba Sebekulu needs to get a second look at them.
Firstly, I'd like to apologize on behalf of the Khafam. There's nobody who is operational in the Khafam who is here today. The CAO and also what we've got is the team from the National Department of Agriculture. It's Mr. Vangile Titi and Mr. Johan Fenter, who is our acting CFO. On my side, I'm here because of I was appointed last year to become the caretaker for NEHA. The reason why it happened that way is because the board in January, due to change in I'll call it a policy decision by the government, they all to resign because three of them were part of the government officials. So, and there are certain activities that had to be done, but we have not yet appointed a board for NEHA. So that's the reason why I'm only a caretaker.
Sorry, Mr. Horse, it's now about 10 past 11.
Yes.
Can you wrap up in, say, 20, 25 minutes? And we'll give ourselves another 20, 25 minutes for questioning. But then I need to ask you a question up front. And that is that you are all based in Pretoria. There is nobody here from Ngeha Farms who can give us an account of their own hands experience of what's going on there. So I don't know. I seek guidance from the honorable members. All we can do here, if we want to continue, is that Mr. Horse could give us an overview of what they know of by remote control. Although he was appointed the caretaker, normally a caretaker is a person that is there. So he's a caretaker in absentia. So I think these are the challenges. I just need to know from our committee secretary, were Ngeha Farms timely informed? As far as you are concerned, they were timely informed. Now, Mr. Horse, we want to put on record, and I would like Mr. Daniels, who is from the minister's office, to take note, and you as senior members of the administration of the NDA, that this is untenable, it is unacceptable. We lay on a meeting of this nature in order to get an understanding of what is happening down on the ground. And there's nobody from there to come and give an account thereof. It's totally unacceptable. Now, I would like to know from the committee, are you satisfied that we should continue? I have put on record our grave disappointment. It is not acceptable. Shall we continue?
Chair, I share your sentiment, and I think while we have people here, we should continue for the next 45 minutes or so, but then leave the option open that at some stage we must get the real people here, people that actually work with, who are on the farm.
Yeah.
And secondly, that we must, again, I think the actual chairperson of the committee supports us, that we must go and see the farm ourselves. I would really like to see what's happening there. I have my suspicions about things happening there, having looked through the papers here, but I want confirmation when we go there. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Pretorius, we take note of what you say, but not only take note, we need to follow up on that. Are the other honorable members satisfied that we take that sort of route? That we shall continue with this presentation, but that we need at some stage or the other, and I would like the committee secretary to pass this info on to the chairperson, at some stage or the other, we need to have the people who are involved in operating the farm here to come and account for what's happening on the farm. You see, colleagues, this has been my fear when the former Department of Land Affairs went on a spree to purchase going concerns. This was my fear, that when you purchase a going concern on a farm, you purchase a whole lot of movable property. And when people are hungry, I mean, they're human beings. The first thing that they do is sell those things that can be moved. And in order to live, I mean, they're not necessarily bad people. It's circumstances. But now we need to have mechanisms in place for that. So this sort of illustrates this kind of problem, where I believe that we should not be involved in running farms as a state department by remote control. I don't think it can work. Not running an agricultural enterprise like a farm. You can perhaps run a factory by remote control, but not a farm. Thank you, Mr. Hall.
You can carry on.
I just want also to add something. Our CEO is undergoing a chemotherapy, so it also coincided with the date. The CEO for Nahan is undergoing chemotherapy for cancer, so won't even be able to come to this place. But I've taken your comments. I think we will provide a follow-up on that in terms of arranging with the committee to go and see what's happening there. So I think what I'll do now, I'll start doing a presentation.
Mr. Hawes, do you undertake to come back on this issue and liaise with the committee to find alternative dates? By when would you do that? I like timelines, you know.
I think we'll find the date for the committee which could be suitable for them. We can do it by tomorrow. I'll ask Russ to organize that, and then we confirm the date for you to be able to visit.
All I want is for you to come back to the committee and to say that we are ready. Give us the date. So it will be the committee's it will then be the committee's responsibility to provide the date. Okay? Right.
Thanks. Chairperson, I think I'll try and give the background of NERHA, and I'll provide you with the map of NERHA and also the management team and services provided by NERHA and success for the center and training, what's happening there. NERHA is a public entity which was established in the 1990s. You'll see in the slides, there are certain things which have just been corrected. We'll give you the corrected slide with all the maps once we've has printed them. And it's classified as Schedule B in terms of PFMA Act of 1999. It was set up to manage land purchased by the government from commercial farmers and land not incorporated to former Ciskei homeland. The total area that was given to NERHA was 14,000 hectares, which 10,000 of the land was transferred to Dushane Tribal Authority, and 4,000 were inherited by NERHA in 1997. And then the 10 farmers, I think that land was given to Department of Agriculture, of which they've used to second 10 farmers in 2003 and 2007. But 620 has not yet been transferred. The STK was managing NERHA from 1984 to 1993. It was managed by NERHA Development Corporation, which was known as NTC, until March 2000 on consultation basis. So the staff of NADC was absorbed by NERHA on April 2008. The board consists of 5 representatives plus 5 representatives. In total, the farmer representative, in total, it makes 6 board members. 3 were national department representatives, 1 was provincial, and 1 was a local representative, and also 1 was a farmer. All government representatives resigned in January 2008. When Mr. Andile Hawes and Mr. Moshe Hawes were appointed as caretakers. Mr. Moshe couldn't come here because they've got a strategic plan they are doing. I've just presented the map of NERHA to give the perspective of the areas of NERHA. The area in red, those are the farms that are under NERHA, I was talking about, where the 10 farmers have been circled. The farm down there at, can I borrow you? This farm is the farm where the NERHA community, NERHA offices are. It's called the Welcome Farm. Okay. And then we've got a chief executive officer, a chief financial officer, training officer, chief training officer, agricultural advisor, who's also a trainer, the agricultural mechanic, who's also a trainer, then the farmer, and the livestock manager, and accounts and admin, and the total of 33 workers who are working on the dairy and livestock farms. And then the service provided by NERCA is agricultural extension service, mechanization service, business and training service, outreach service. In this case, you see in your annual report, they talk about postal services. And also they provide sales of vegetables and livestock to the nearest community. And also some of it are taken to the markets if the prices are good. And also they've got the breeding of Nguni cattle on the ground there. And then the financials for NERCA is 875. The budget for, I think, for 2008, where the it's only on revenue of 1.174, and then the grant for the department was 2395, and then the total income is 3.569, and then the actual expenditure is 3.430, and then the net profit. But previous year we had a loss of 84,000. And then the budget for zero profit for this year, we hope that we'll be in a position to achieve what they've budgeted for. You could see that the change in terms of grants from the government from 2007 to 2009, they've got 28%. And yet with their own income, it was only a percentage, a 2.2% change increase. And also the total income is 18.4%. And then the actual spending has increased by 10%, of which mostly is increased on salaries. And then under training, what they're mainly focusing on at the present moment, like last year, they focused on life skills, of which 40 people were trained. It's mostly the youth coming from the villages surrounding the area. They're doing all the sort of communication and also budgeting and banking and computer literacy. And then out of these 40, 18 of those we did computer, and then 18 of those also did the basic agricultural course and basic entrepreneur course, and they are awarded certificates of competency. And then just to indicate the farmers in close to NERCA, those farms that I've shown in red line, this is the guy who showed that if farmers are given an opportunity, they can perform very well. The name of the farmer is Matisi. When he took the farm, he decided to do things out of his own power. This is the result that he got in the first year of his settlement. But others, because they didn't have enough money to do their own things, have not been able to produce such good results. But it's an indication that with good farmers, motivated farmers, we can achieve best when we settle our farmers. And then in order for us to be able to move forward during this current season, what we have decided to do with the NERCA staff, we are going to do an evaluate the impacts of the center in relation to agriculture operation in the district, and also encourage the linkage of NERCA to district and municipalities agenda. As you see, realize that NERCA is located in the Buffalo City. So any institution which is situated in those areas will try to expand their impact to the bigger area, of which in this case is the district and municipality linked to that. That is what we have to try and see. As we've indicated, that they mainly rely on government subsidy, of which we cannot continuously do that. So by also extending their area of cooperation, we'll be in a position to create that. And also, at NERCA, you see in the person, there are certain vegetables which are being sold under tunnels and all those things. The reason was trying to improve income so that they can have alternative funding. But again, the economies of scale are not yet giving them an opportunity to reach a level where they can be self-sufficient. They still rely on that. And the dairy that is there is a dairy which was inherited during the time when they purchased those farms. It's a dairy which was built in 1974. So having assessed the potential of the dairy in terms of supplying milk and also providing training to quite a number of farms which have been settled on land reform farms, there's a need to have a proper training center around that area. So NERCA has decided that we need to upgrade the technology of the dairy and also move it to the place where it could be properly secured. Currently, the farm is situated on a farm which was transferred to Mutishane Tribal Authority. So those are the strategic intent that we intend to engage on with NACHA for the next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hawes. You've done well in terms of time. But unfortunately, you didn't give us enough information. Honorable members, it's time for questions. Who wants to take the first one?
Mr. Petourius?
Chair, I'm not sure actually where to start, but I'm trying to figure out what this farm setup is and how it works. I must say, I'm really a bit in the cold still. The way I see it is that some of the land was given to individual farmers, 8 or so farmers at some stage, after the office was bought by the state. But as part of the expenditure, government still funds some of these activities. I'm just trying to bring the two together. For example, government spends millions of rands on fencing on these farms, and my understanding of a farm that's been given over is that it becomes private property in a sense, and that the farmer would be responsible for those expenses. Maybe Mr. Hawes can just explain to me that confusion in my own mind how it works. What I'm basically saying is that farms were given over to private individuals. I'm not sure whether they got title of the land, probably not. But then the government still sponsors activities on those farms, and that's sort of a hybrid system which I don't quite understand how it works.
Mr. Petourius, that is why I said that Mr. Hawes didn't give us all the information. I think, Mr. Hawes, we've got three members here who are brand new members. They are maidens. So this is their maiden voyage to Nkeha without seeing the place. Please take them on a tour of Nkeha by telling them exactly what's going on there, what's happening, what portion is being farmed by the state on behalf of future beneficiaries or whatever, what portion has been allocated to the tribal authority, and you mentioned those other farms. What's happening on each of those farms that was allocated to beneficiaries already? You spoke about somebody being very successful, but that's what we always hear. The one little thumb that sticks out that's successful, we don't hear about the other thumbs that are unsuccessful and that are failing. Please take us on that trip so that all the members will have a sense of what's happening. Is there anything more you want Mr. Andile to do in this first round? Yes, Mr. Gaylor?
No. Unfortunately, I'm from that side. I more or less know what's happening. According to my knowledge, that those farms are divided. Some given to the communities, and this section is farmed by the government. But I think let him take us on tour. But basically, because of the time factor, because the people that we're supposed to talk to are not here. The truth of the matter is that if you look at the expenditure, you've got 93 cattle here. You've got 66 farm workers. I mean, from the word go, you're a farm chairperson. You are losing. You don't stand a chance. Most of your money goes to salaries. One would have thought that maybe even the last portion would be given to communities. Then the government oversees that system, but not the government farm. That's where the problem really is. That is where the problem is that the government is pouring money into something that is not going anywhere.
Mr. Hawes, can you carry on? But I also just need to draw the attention of all of us here that here is a figure that is being given as an income, and that a so-called profit is based on that figure, where a significant part is a grant. So what you are saying here is that the revenue they generated during 2008-2009, can honourable members look at the financials?
Yes, sir.
Is 1,174,000. They were given a grant by the department, I take it, of 2,395. Then you say it's a total income. That cannot be an income. A grant remains a grant. And then you say that the actual expenditure was 3430, and you deduct that from the joint grant and the own revenue amount, and you say that there's a net profit of 139. And you and is this to try and illustrate to us that there was a net loss in the previous year of 84,000? That too was not a loss of 84,000, it was a loss of 84 plus the 1866. Because how can you utilize a grant as an income? I mean, please, Mr. Hawes, your department cannot bring such a financial statement to us. We should be told bluntly that this is a grant, and that minus the grant, this is the amount of money that has been lost. Because here we have a total loss. If you take 2395, add on another 139,000, that gives you, say 24 and 135, that gives you 2535. We have actually lost 2,535,000 rand. Because that grant, if it had been employed in such a manner that it brought in an income which was larger than the grant, then there would be a profit situation. This is not. This is bad business. We can't continue with something like this. But in any case, I don't want to
take up the time. I thought that we just need to have this background, that we are pumping in money into a bottomless pit where we're not seeing any good results coming out of it. This is not so only now. For the last 10 years that I've been in this committee, I've seen this situation from year to year going from bad to worse to worse to worse to worse to worse. Oh, we can't carry on this way.
Yes,
Your salaries are 1.651. 1,751,000. You got 93 cattle. That's out of the question.
Sir, can I just follow up on that question about salaries? It's a technical,
Mr. Pretorius?
Technical change which happened in the previous financial years. The farms were managed by some outside management body, it appears.
Mm.
And in this financial year, the total staff was taken over by, I presume, by government, by the farms. So they work now as employees for the farms at a cost of 1.65 million. I would then assume also that part of the reason for the taking over, because this has been a pattern over the last couple of years, is that they add more benefits to the system because they become now effectively full-time employees rather than consultants or part-time workers. Maybe Mr. Hawes can just confirm whether that view is correct, that once they've been taken over by, let's call it government, that there are also additional perks attached to that, like medical benefits and pension benefits, all those things which add up to a huge amount.
All right,
Mr. Hawes.
Chairperson, I think your comments are quite right. NEHA is not making a profit. If you look at livestock, it's not making a profit. If you look at the vegetables last year, it's only where they've indicated profit. And that is why when you go to the strategic intent about NEHA, the first thing that we want to do is to do an evaluation of an impact in order for us to be able to respond according to the needs of the center. I think that is the reason. You're quite right. That's why I've put in terms of our strategic intent what we need to do in order for us to be able to move forward with NEHA. That has been done. So, and then coming back to, I think the history of NEHA, I'd like to repeat it back. Let's go back to the first slide there. Again. In my background, I've indicated that NEHA comes from the time when the SDKs were formed, when they were forming the homeland. When the homelands were purchased, there were certain hotspots which were not incorporated into the homelands. They remain outside the homelands. So those hotspots were given to STK for management by STK. They had operations. NEHA was a pineapple farm where they were running pineapples. So later, the government withdrew, closed down STK. And then that STK was taken over by the consultant called the National Development Corporation, as I've indicated, until 1990. Go to the next slide. Until April 2009. Those are the ones who were employed. So when there was a change in government, those are the guys who were managing those farms which were under STK. So all the operations that were taking place, they were closed down. Pineapple, if you go there, you'll see a big factory which has pineapple. And the majority of those farms that I've indicated there, it's only one or two farms which are contributing towards pineapple industry. If I could have even put the map for farms which were operated as early as 1974, we do have a diagram indicating to them. So the majority of those farms were not producing for the last 20 years. They're not producing pineapple. Some were affected by the decision taken by ARC to close down certain soils from pineapple operation. But that's the case. So that is the history of Nosnerha. It was the management of land by this. I think the land has now been taken to the Department of Agriculture. It's managed by the Department of Agriculture. I think Ms. Tidi can give you a full background on how the land is being managed by Nosnerha. I've just indicated here that land, because always I wanted to give a perspective of what land are we talking about. In those areas, we've got only one farm which is under Nosnerha, which has got a mechanization unit, which has got offices, which has also got the Nguni Stad. The rest of the farms have been lying fallow. In 2007, the Department of Land Settlement started to circle farms in those areas. So that is the background regarding Nosnerha.
So, Mr. Hawes, this grant of 2.395. And this amount of 1.17 is supposed to be with regard to that particular small entity where there's this mechanization and those few little things, a small little Nguni stud, which is reduced to what, 93, Mr. Gaylor? Yeah. Is that correct?
Yes, what I'll do, I'll ask Mr. Fenter, because he is one of the former directors, just to give also a perspective on the whole situation.
Do you want to get Mrs. Viti first, or first Mr. Fenter?
Right. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll give information to the committee in my capacity now as the acting CFO and from the Department of Agriculture, not as a previous board member. It is true. National Department of Agriculture for the last couple of years is receiving a parliamentary grant from Parliament on its budget, and then this budget goes to Nosnerha Farms Pty Limited. Nosnerha Farms Pty Limited is a service center. This service center is supposed to render a service to the adjacent committee. Community, not only the Nosnerha farms, whereby farmers through the department state disposal process, state land disposal process, have now been allocated PTOs to farm on that land, but this Nosnerha Pty Limited is rendering a service to those farmers and the adjacent community, and the farm and the services goes as what Mr. Voss has put on the slides, differs from administrative advice, contracting, plowing, and land preparation to the farmers, and then some a little part of that deals with training. Now, it is true, it is a given fact. You've already alluded to it, Chair, that Nosnerha Farms Pty Limited cannot operate without the parliamentary grant. At previous portfolio committee meetings, previous years, this has been again emphasized and emphasized. So that is true, it's a given fact. Now, Mrs. Tidi can elaborate in terms of the department's intention with what is Nosnerha Farms in terms of the service center. But to share some light to Mr. Pretorius's question in terms of the salaries. What happened up to 31st March 2008? This was practice that the department inherited. Is that there was a managing agent. There was Nega Farms Pty Limited, and then there was an NADC, Nega Agricultural Development Corporation. They delivered the management service to Nega Farms. So we, as the board then, decided, but this is confusing. Let's end the contract with the managing agent, because it is with five people, and then take up these five people on the company. So this is why we had a situation whereby in the previous financial year there was expenditure of 459,000, and now it's 2.81. So it was also in previous meetings of portfolio committee being brought to the attention that most of the budget of Nega Farms Pty Limited was in the past devoted to this managing agent, and that gave a wrong impression. So that is why it was decided from 1 April 2009 that the services of the managing agent was ended, and then they were included into the Nega Farms Pty Limited personnel. Thank you, Chair.
Our members, have you taken note?
Right, Mrs. Pity.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members. Let me also start by drawing the distinction between Nega Farms Pty Limited and the Nega Farmers. Nega Farms Pty Limited has been explained by Mr. Fenter. Nega Farmers are part of the 125,000 hectares state land which is being administered by the department on behalf of Public Works. Because all this land is held by Public Works, the Department of Agriculture administers the state land that is categorized as agricultural land. So we deal with Nega Farmers according to the policies that have been established. People get settled there. There is a process of advertisement, of interviewing, and of settlement that goes on. After that, they are given permission to occupy for 1 year, and then they move to signing lease agreements. So there are a number of problems with those farmers there in terms of moving from permission to occupy to signing lease agreements and to outright disposal of land. So there are those two separate processes. Nega Farms Limited is critical in that area because, as Mr. Hoss has said, it serves as a service center, as an extension facility. And there's work that they are doing in terms of outreach to the surrounding communities, but also to the 10 farmers that have been settled there. Our intentions are that we have to turn this facility into a center of excellence so that we provide these mechanization services to the communities. We provide extension services to communities, and we also use the center as some kind of facility where people can come and see demonstrations of best practice in agriculture. So that's where we want to go with this particular facility. And therefore, we cannot view it as a profit-making entity in the end. But we'll still be coming to the portfolio committee with our ideas in terms of how we want to change this facility so that it services both the community and also the farmers that are settled after we have resolved some of the problems that are there. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions now?
Mr. Pretorius?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for the explanation. I understand what's happening now. Can I then just ask for the 10 farms that have been given off to individual owners then? I presume then that the state still sponsor them in certain respects with like fencing I've seen here, a huge amount, almost $2 million for fencing. And are there other expenses that the state still sponsor them for? Would there be input costs for crops and things like that? Would there be any financial assistance in that line? And if so, when will it stop? Is it an ongoing thing, or what is the intention?
All right, Mrs. Vicky, make a note.
Any other questions? No. Mrs. Vicky, can I just ask? You said here that it's PTOs and then lease agreements and then eventually possible outright transfer. Now, with regard to the 10,000 hectares, that is an outright transfer to the Midushane Tribal Authority. I take it that is now the tribal authority's responsibility. So then you had 4,000 hectares, which was inherited by Ngeha in 1997. Now, you settled 10 farmers in 2007 on 3,700 hectares, out of which 620 hectares has not been transferred. Now, there is this dichotomy. On the one hand, we're talking of PTOs, then moving on to lease agreements, and now you're saying that out of this 3,700 hectares, 620 has not been transferred yet. If you could explain what is meant by that now. And then you say that there is now this 300 hectare farm where the Ngeha, shall I say, the so-called depot for the mechanization products and what have you. And I take it that the 93 Nguni cattle are also running on the 300 hectares, whether that is so. Now, what we would like to know is that, yeah, you have an entity which is being utilized to assist the other farmers in that area. This 300 hectares is the headquarters from which this facility provides assistance to the environment around there, the other farmers and what have you. Now, apart from these 10 farmers, are there any others that are benefiting out of this particular center? And if so, how many other people are benefiting? Not individuals, farms, because you are assisting farms. That particular farm may have 20 beneficiaries, a particular farm. So what we are trying to get is that you have, for example, CASP funds, and you have other forms of funding that is meant to assist resource-poor farmers. And then Mr. Hawes mentioned that there's one of these farmers, I take it, of these 10, that's very successful. Tell us what are his operations or her operations, and what makes that farmer successful, and what makes then, by implication, the rest of them lesser successful, or perhaps even unsuccessful, and whether there are any of them that are placed in a situation. You know, there's a word now used regarding the land bank that they are in the ICU. In such a situation that they cannot survive. We would like to know that. And what are the factors that cause that? Because, yeah, you have a facility which is funded by the state to provide assistance to those people. And if, since 2007, this would be depends on when in 2007, but if it was early 2007 or even mid 2007, then they've only had one season, and two seasons, and they are now heading for a third one. I don't know, two or three. So if we can get a sense of that, and it'll give a perspective to whether this whole intervention. This business of putting in almost 2.5 million rand a year is helping or not helping? Thank you. Mr. Gaila?
No, just a small one. within that same vicinity, you got Fort Cox, which is assisting the local farmers, government sponsored. Then you got Donny, not far from the next vicinity, also government sponsored. Is in there duplication of services? I think, whether if you don't answer us now, but I think within that chairperson, I'm from there, as I say, I know the area. You got Fort Cross here.
And Donny.
And they're doing the same, it's totally the same. So isn't there a duplication of services to those communities? But whether if you come again with that answer, maybe we won't get the answer now. Thank you.
Right, Mrs. Witty. Sorry.
You know, it's funny because the Abraham knows me for a very long time, but he's the one who Okay. The question on the 300 hectares, Neha P2I Limited, I will leave that for Mr. Paul to answer. Let me answer the questions where I am most competent in. And those relate to the 10 farmers that have been settled and the 620 hectares that has not been transferred. Yes, the farmers have been settled on 10 farms. There is one farm that is remaining, and that's Rockland Farm, and it is 620 hectares in extent. Now, this farm was supposed to have been a land where the farm workers that used to reside on these 10 farms.
On the pineapple project.
Yes. They were supposed to be moved to that 620 hectares. And that has not happened. And this is one of the things that has created some tensions in the community where we need to resolve this matter. Okay. I have forgotten your... Okay.
No, you spoke of outright transfer.
Okay. Yes. The policy on state land administration requires that, because this is still land in the hands of the state. Even if we settle farmers there, we spend money to ensure that the infrastructure is in place. So the fences have to be in place, the boreholes have to be in place, so all the infrastructure, and we have to also ensure that the cell is well managed. So we spend money on the infrastructure, on the land, and on ensuring that the cell is properly managed on that land. So that would be the expenditure that we have on that land.
And
While they have permission to occupy, we do that. While they have lease agreements, we do that. As soon as there is a complete handover to the farmers, then that is the cut-off point. But we have to maintain the infrastructure on those state farms as long as they are still within
your jurisdiction.
Exactly. So that is where it will end. We've been talking now with the minister, because the process takes a long time, because we have to write submissions that go up to our minister, then they go up to the Minister of Public Works, and then they come down. So now we are in the process of asking our minister to talk to the Minister of Public Works to delegate the responsibility for signing the permissions to occupy and signing the lease agreement, so that we can fast track the processes. The intervention of the department would take 3 to 5 years, because we'll be monitoring the farmers. If they don't perform well, then they have to relinquish state land. But if they perform well, then they are given over the land to occupy permanently. Thanks.
So, Mrs. Titi, sorry, is there no outright transfer up to now?
No.
All right. There's
they are still on permission to occupy. They do not even
have still on the first day.
Permission to occupy.
Okay. They don't have a lease agreement at the moment.
No.
Okay. But when they do enter into a lease agreement, then you say that you will be responsible as department for the general maintenance of the infrastructure, which means fences, which means everything else. You know, I find that a very strange lease agreement. Because
it applies to all state lands.
Mm-hmm.
All 125,000 hectares of state lands throughout the country.
That the department is responsible for the virtually the
upkeep of the infrastructure.
Yes.
For example, let's assume that there was a Lister diesel engine to pump water there. And that person, as a result, the lessee, as a result of the lessee's negligence, it has burnt out. Must the department replace it?
No.
I would love to know what the
terms of these agreements are, because there are grey areas. Right, in any event, what we are saying here now is we've asked you also whether in the two or three seasons, whatever it is, depending on when these people were settled on the land, what sort of successes have they notched up? Mr. Hoare spoke about one of them that has done very well. What's happening to the others?
I think Misty, as she indicated, the main focus was to put the infrastructure that is necessary to protect the property. But I was just showing you, and that's why I said a motivated farmer. He used his own money to show what he wants to do on the farm. At this stage, we have not provided any production input, because it was a process of negotiating for them to have this agreement. In that process, he couldn't wait. He decided to do his own thing. So I was putting that thing just as an indication that there is an element of seriousness with the farmers who are being leased the property, as you say.
All right, we've diverted a
bit, but in any case, it was necessary to get this background information. Mr. Gaylor?
No, what I was just asking,
your mic.
All the time factor, and we are clear now what is happening. Because the reality, let us be fair to each other, this is duplication of services. They're talking of stealing those people, but yes, Fort Cox is doing that next door to them. This is a wastage of taxpayers' money. I'm sorry to say it, but that's the truth of the matter. So we must find accordingly. It is our duty as a committee, and we must go there and find accordingly. Because this is just taking money and dumping it, and yes, all the support needing money to do something better, to do a better service. So, as a committee, you must sit down and find accordingly. That is all.
Well, what I hear from Mr. Gaylor is that we need to look at our priorities again. Whether we want to put money into a bottomless pit. I do realize the situation where it was inherited, sitting with it. But then, you know, an inheritance too, sometimes it becomes very costly to maintain. You've got to ask yourself, do I opt out or cop out of this, or do I carry on? So in short, gentlemen, would you agree that we rather ask the department to come back at some stage or the other in the new year with a plan? And I've said it before. You know, we say the boeres say one thing. And I'm a boer, I farm, so I'm a boer. A boer is not a white person. A boer is a farmer. I boer, and we say that a plan which was a donor weer wees. Dag anders reën hy nie. A plan must be like thunder. It must be thick and dark, doctor, otherwise it will not rain. The same year. Give us a plan like thunder, that this you believe would be the way to deal with it, bearing in mind that if the idea of keeping the center running and subsidizing it annually is merely to provide assistance and training and that sort of stuff, then you have facilities which is close by. Let us make use of the facilities that we have optimally, so that we can bring about the best results, on the one hand, for the state. As the state has a responsibility to see that the land we purchase is utilized optimally. In this case, the land was not purchased by the state. Now it was done donkeys years ago. Fact of the matter is that there's state money involved, whether it was the previous government that paid for it or whether we're paying for it now. And while we're on the issue of what's happening to this, can we take advantage of your presence here by just asking you that in the last financial year, the Department of Land Affairs had bought many going concerns. Many. Now, if a department whose task is to redistribute and resettle and get other people involved buys a going concern, it will need the expertise and the assistance of the Department of Agriculture. Now, whether the Department of Agriculture is in any way involved in helping to run those farms or to provide assistance or advice or whatever, whether this is happening or whether this is at the moment the sole responsibility of the current owner. The current owner is now the new department. They own these farms now as going concerns. If you could just give us a sense of that, because if I look in the crystal ball, I see a disaster waiting to happen. As I may just give you one example. In the Dundee Washbank area, a game farm was purchased. And that, you know, one of the people there, one of the clever Johnnies living there, has actually been offering people who want to, for argument's sake, come and shoot a kudu for 1,000 rand. So there's no... my problem is that we go and spend the budgets, and then, you know, when the new budget comes within 3 months, we've got nothing left. Because we made too many commitments like these that shouldn't have been done. So real land reform is not taking place. But in this process, there is no attention paid to the ecological disaster that is waiting to happen. Because, I mean, you cannot just go and start shooting animals and not taking into account that you need to breed. And you need to have continuity. You can only shoot a cow and shoot certain animals. You can't just offer anything to anybody. But that's just one example. So I just want to know whether, in terms of the agricultural enterprises that they had bought out in the way of going concerns, whether you people are helping in any way to see that those are running.
Mr. Horst,
Mrs. Titi points to you.
You are the guilty party.
Chairperson, I acknowledge your concern. And if I can take you back, that's the reason why the Department of Agriculture decided to have what we call LAB. LAB was promoting that integration in terms of implementing government programs. And as a follow-up to that, what we did last year together with Land Affairs was to do an assessment of all the PLUS projects. We started with the PLUS project. What are the problems that are being experienced by the farmers? Out of that process, we developed an assessment form, an assessment sheet, of which we are going to go through to all the farms. Because anything that we feel that we need to do in terms of integrated approach in dealing with the issues of agriculture must be informed by something. So that assessment that we will be undertaking together with Land Affairs has given us an indication that we need to improve certain areas in terms of settlement of farmers. Because Land Affairs, it's about settlement of farmers and providing support to farmers. I think the first province that we dealt with was Gauteng, of which Gauteng probably by December will be having an agreement on how they are going to deal with their settlement project of farmers. Especially as we are also all aware that all the provinces had prioritized the commodities that they are going to use for improving the program of settlement of farmers. They are counting, they've got AgriHub. Now they're not going to fund any project based on the applications by the farmers, but they'll only fund to those priority products. KZN has finished their priority. Eastern Cape has finished their priority. For 58, we know now in each province what are the priority commodities that they want to use to settle the farmers. But the change in administration has given us a delay in towards the implementation of that, because we have to review our own new strategic forecast in terms of what we did. But we're still going to continue to have that integrated approach in dealing with issues of development. We've engaged the provinces. And then another thing that we started to implement was to what we have been calling area-wide based planning. That in the olden days, if you may still remember, we used to have what we called IDP. In that time, it was called Initial Development Plan for Farms, where you allocate either a department does the development plan for the farmers and then give those plans to the farmers with all the programs to implement and monitor the implementation of those development plans. So with the area-based planning, it's exactly the same thing, but we are now calling it like the IDPs, more or less the same concept like the IDPs. But the problem, the municipality decided to move faster than the government in terms of implementing the IDPs. This process of land lab, we're saying to municipalities, let's integrate the principles of best practices into this IDP, because you'll recall that most of these IDPs, they ignore the important thing, the natural resource management. That is what now we are engaging the municipalities to say, let's have a one approach in dealing with issues of development. Then we're not going to have the issues, as you have indicated, where farmers are being developed without providing the necessary support, where farmers are planting things which do not have a market. I think, I hope by beginning of next year, you'll see the rollout of this plan where we work together with the commodity groups. Even our minister at the present moment has also indicated that we cannot afford to fund development in silos. That is what she has promoted. Let's have our funding under one pocket so that we are in a position now, when we spend money to areas where we're going to have proper impact. And you still recall that the outcome of the extension program, that was the key area where we found that when we were starting with land settlement, we didn't have enough extension officers. Okay, so I think things are being catered for. We'll update you as we move forward in terms of how we integrate all these processes in order for our investment to have an impact to areas where we should be targeted.
Right, so what you are saying, Mr. Hawes, is that you people will be involved in contributing towards plans to make those farms that have been purchased optimally utilized with agricultural activity. Just say yes or no, that's all.
Definitely.
Right.
Thank you. Mr. Pretorius has just
indicated something, and then after that we're going to say goodbye to one another.
I just wanted to add on to your suggestion that they must come up with a plan specifically about Nefa Farms and the future of that. I just wanted to make a point that plan should have milestones, mileposts along the lines, so that one can move away from a continuous system of creating dependent farmers. You eventually want to come to the point where the farmer becomes self-sufficient. And I take the point that we need to support farmers to progress from emerging status to finally to commercial farmers eventually. But it can't be a never-ending process. You can't simply add money every year for the same thing and the ten farmers remain emerging for their life. So that plan, I think, must have definite time frames or time scales or mileposts that if by a certain date a certain farmer hasn't reached that milestone, he must be kicked off and somebody else must be given an opportunity. To eventually get to the point where we have 10 commercial farms. Thank you.
All right. Just one or two household matters. We are having public hearings on what dates?
Tuesday, Wednesday,
Tuesday and Wednesday, the 17th and the 18th. Have you all received the agendas? I haven't, eh?
No.
All right. What are the hearings about? Climate change hearings. Very, very important. So, members, please, next week, we're not on holiday. We are still working. Is there anybody that has something to say regarding our discussion here that is very vital to be heard? No? Okay. May I wish the NDA and since OPP is still here, may I wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and a very prosperous New Year. May the dear Lord assist you, guide you, and strengthen you in the difficult tasks that lie ahead in the execution of all our duties and in helping to create a country and a tomorrow which will be better than the one that we have had for our children and our grandchildren. Now, when you leave today, they say it's Friday the 13th. You know, every morning I wake up, I thank God for the previous night's pleasant sleep and the piece of bread I could have and the breakfast that I just had now. I'm grateful for it. My sister here brought me the coffee specially. And I say that every day is a day that's given to you by the Lord. And to me, there's no such thing as Friday the 13th being this or that or the other. Every day is for us to work hard, to enjoy, and to remember who brought us into this world and for what purpose. And if we can just contribute a wee bit towards making the life of our people easier, better, that their children, who are our children, can look forward to a future where they will not be plagued by want, that they will be able to do something for themselves. And I say to our people that our country with a population of 48 million, that is your most valuable asset. We need to nurture it, and we need to skill them. I mean, even if you just skill a couple of people that can go out into the countryside and help people to inoculate their animals and run that sort of service, even if they charge that person 2 rand per head to inoculate them and plus the cost of the medication, we are rendering a service and we are empowering somebody who can from there grow into something bigger. None of us, perhaps some yes, were born with golden spoons in our mouths. Many of us had to come up from the bottom up. So there's a power above us. It gives us the strength. Let us utilize it in this festive period. Let us remember where we come from and where we want to go to. And as you leave now, may you drive safely, reach your destination safely. The easiest part is the one in the plane. The most difficult one is from there to your homes and dear ones. May you arrive there safely. Baba, you want to say something? I say this to my colleagues here and to everybody here because you're all making a contribution.
Chairperson, I only like just to register my apology for the 2 days of next week. I'm going to attend a summit as well in KZN on global warming as well, which affects the fragile communities out there.
So, Maria, you've got Baba Shebekulu's, yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.